Last week was my wife's birthday. I won't tell you which one, but it was my wife's birthday. Also, last week was my birthday. I told her, I said, I'll take you out to a steak restaurant to eat. Where'd you like to go? So we mentioned one in Houston. She said, well, you know, if you go there, you're going to have to dress up, wear a suit and tie. Not that I'm, you know, opposed to wearing suits and ties, but our second option was another steak restaurant. If you wear a tie there, they'll cut it off and staple it on the wall. So that was more to my liking, you know. But anyway, if you've never gone there, well, don't wear a tie. It's trail dust in Houston. They have ties all over the wall. For people that wore them in and out, they have a big deal. They can wear and take the scissors and cut it off and hang on the wall. So we ended up going to neither one. Anyway, there are occasions when you have to consider what will be the appropriate dress. Not many, but there are some. I can recall growing up that some churches were described as being formal or informal, not so much on the worship service, but on what people wore. Formal church was a church where everybody wore suits and ties and dresses, and they all dressed up. And the informal church was one where folks wore sports shirts and slacks, and that was the way where they were kind of identified. And so a lot of folks had an excuse, well, I don't want to go to that church because you have to dress up, and I don't have the clothes to wear to go to that kind of church. So there was a day, I guess, that there was an appropriate Sunday attire that a person would have to wear if they went to church. Today, I'm not sure if very many people have what they call their Sunday wardrobe, that you only wear this on Sunday. Now, the theme dress for heaven has nothing to do with the clothes you buy in stores and the clothes you actually wear on your body. I'm talking about clothes for our soul. Clothes for that part of us that are spiritual that we cannot see with our human eyes. I'm talking about what you ought to be wearing night and day. This is one garment you don't take off. When you dress up once and you stay dressed, you're prepared at all times to stand before the Lord. A lot of folks get themselves in an emergency situation and they got to pray. Well, are you dressed for prayer? Well, I got on my suit. No, are you dressed for prayer? You know, you have to be living right and repentant, and you have to be pleasing to God to get your prayers answered, to get your prayers heard, accepted. If I regard sin in my life, I'm not dressed appropriately. I have sin spotted clothes, and so if you're going to come before God to pray, to worship, to walk, to talk, you need to dress right. There's a right dress to wear when you approach God. Whenever you get ready to leave this world for the next, you better be dressed for heaven. So anytime you stand before the Lord, you need to wear this dress. Anytime you leave this world, you need to wear this dress. So you live in it, you walk in it, you sleep in it, you play in it. There will be times during this message that I'll refer to this garment as the WLs. The WLs. You ought to wear your WLs. All the time. I want us to begin the examination of this garment with a parable found in Matthew 22. I've given you all the scriptures this morning, again, that I'll be using. Quite a few here. If I don't get through with them, you have them. You can go home and read them, and then you'll be able to put them all together. Chapter 22, let's begin with verse 1. Christ is telling this parable. The kingdom of heaven is to be compared to a certain king. This would be God the Father, who made a marriage for his son. This would be God the Son, Jesus Christ. Sent out servants to call people that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. Again, he sent forth servants to the same people with a second invitation. Tell them that are bidden, behold, we're getting closer to the day. I have prepared for the dinner. My oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready. So come now to the marriage feast. And they made light of it and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. That is, there were things more important to them than going to this feast. And the remnant took his servants and entreated them spitefully and slew them. That is, many of those who came with the invitations were mistreated. When the king heard this, he was angry, and he sent forth his armies and destroyed those murderers and burned up their city. Then saying to his servants, the wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were found unworthy. So the servants went out this time to the highways, different places, and they gathered in as many as they could find, bad and good. And the wedding was this time furnished with guests. Now this is the verse that interests us. And when the king came in to see the guests, the wedding had not taken place yet, so the king walks in to see all those who had come as a result of his invitation, and he saw there a man which did not have on a wedding garment. Now there's our garment, clothes. And he said to him, "Friend, why is it that you have on no wedding garment?" And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, "Bind this man foot and hand and take him away and cast him into outer darkness, and he shall end up weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen." Now I'm only going to deal with that aspect of this parable in verse 12, and actually verse 11, regarding the wedding garment. The man was not properly addressed to be accepted by the king. And it says here he was speechless as to being asked, "Why aren't you wearing the wedding garment?" Speechless means the man could not think of any legitimate, reasonable excuse. He could not plead ignorance that the king did not want him to wear a wedding garment. He could not plead innocence that he was unable to secure a garment, and I'll talk about that in a second. Nor was he ignorant that this garment was absolutely required of him. Now, it seems, as I read some books, that it was customary in that time, if the king wanted to ensure that everyone was properly dressed, if you don't want to have any possibility of someone coming dressed that you did not like as the king, well, then you better furnish all of them with garments. And so, sure enough, when the invitation went out, a garment went with it from the king's wardrobe chest, from his closet. Or when you came to the feast and you walked in the door, each person was given a hand-selected garment provided by the king for you to put on. In this case, no one would be dressed in anything the king did not like. Nothing could offend the king would be worn by anyone because he had selected everything that would be worn and he had provided all the clothes for everyone to wear himself. He would choose the robe for a certain person. And that's what they will wear. Now, we are told here that this king walked up and said, "Sir, where is your wedding garment?" I doubt if all the garments would have the monogram of the king on them. And it seems that the only one who asked this question would be the king. The other people that had gathered around all had on the king's garments, but they did not, when they looked at this man's garments, assume, well, it's not of the king. They could not tell the king had not given him this garment. It looked to them pretty good. They looked at it, they looked at theirs, and they said, "You know, I don't see a whole lot of difference between what I'm wearing and what they're wearing." So the people who were the guests did not know that this man was not wearing something that belonged to the king and had been given to the king. But the king knew when he saw it, "Hey, that's not mine. That's not my coat. That's not my robe. That's not my garment. I mean, it looks good, but it's not mine. It didn't come from me. And it doesn't meet my standards." I think, this man was probably decked out in his royal best. And he probably viewed the garment he wore as equal to or maybe superior to the garment that he would have been given by the king. I would assume it was designed to really bring attention to him, more so than the king's. It was probably designed to bring him honors. Probably it had a lot of lettuce on it. I was talking this last week to a person who was in the military and talking about this, and he said, "You know," I said, "probably he has some ribbons on there and some medals and some stripes and some trophies and some honors and various kinds of pins." And this guy said, "Oh, that's his lettuce." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, that's what the people in the military used to call all those decorations on your chest. They call that lettuce." Now, I don't know where it's true enough. That's what he said. I thought it was interesting. But this man probably had a lot of lettuce on, you know, and it was all pertaining to what he had gained, what he had accomplished, his honors, his glories, his trophies. And the king wouldn't allow that, of course, with his robe. I mean, the king says, "This banquet is for my son. I want him to be honored, not somebody else." And I think this man probably had a lot of lettuce on. But the king wasn't impressed. Yeah, maybe the other folks in the bank would say, ooh, look at that. He's got all kind of ribbons and medals. I don't have any of that kind of stuff, but boy, that is something else. But that wasn't from the king. And that didn't bring attention to the king's son, who was the bridegroom of the wedding, and that's what the whole feast was all about, to focus all the attention on the son and the bridegroom. Now, there are a lot of people in life that have decided to dress themselves for God's approach, God's banquet, God's meeting, like this man did. They get dressed up and they say, well, now, I want you to notice my good conduct medal, God. And I got a good Samaritan medal. And I've got a good worker ribbon. I got a good neighbor stripe on my sleeve. And I got some good worker trophies. I mean, I got a lot of good little things here. I got some lettuce I want you to look at, God. Look at all that lettuce on my lapel. I think God was saying that person was in Isaiah chapter 64, verse 6. Middle part of that verse says, in God's eyes now, as he looks at your lettuce, not your, whoever presents this kind of garment, they said, I'm going to dress up to meet God, so I'm going to put on my lettuce, all my good stuff, impress him with all the things that I've done in my life, with my life. And here's what God says. All of our righteousness, the lettuce would be our righteousness, my goodness. All our righteousness in God's eyes appear to him to be nothing more than filthy rags. Now that's really a letdown for us who have worked so hard to make such a beautiful garment, outstanding things we have done, and God sees us as wearing nothing but filthy rags. Sometimes when you go shopping, you see some clothes on sale. And boy, you see, these prices are fantastic. And then you notice that there's a little tag on there that says these are seconds. That these have slight blemishes somewhere within the garment. Something's wrong. You may not notice it real easy, but the inspectors, when the garment was made, they caught it. And it was the cause of rejection. But you can buy it real cheap because it's not perfect. So God looks at our garments and he says, they're seconds. You know, I see a lot of imperfections in the garment. I see more than the lettuce. I see all kind of faults that have been covered up that you have not brought to my attention. All you're letting me know about is the good conduct medals and the good Samaritan pins. He said, I see there a garment stained with envy and lust and selfishness and jealousy and anger and laziness and dishonesty and hypocrisy and on and on and on it goes. I found all kinds of seconds, blemishes in this garment of yours. Can I get through with it, man? It's, to me, filthy rags. But, you see, our self-righteous garments bear some similarity to his righteous garments. When folks look at each other, they say, yeah, you're good. You're good. I mean, you're righteous. Well, you know, when we look at each other, we say we all look pretty good. But the king says, oh, that's not the way I see these garments that people wear. Normally in self-righteous garments that people wear, all the lettuce that they wear, you know that there's no pins there that glorify him. People don't talk about that. There's nothing there that symbolizes that you recognize him as the Lord, as the Master, as the Ruler, as the King. He sees nothing in that garment of most people that are self-righteous, that honors him, that deifies him, that magnifies him, that applauds him, that recommends him. You see, men see themselves as good, but God sees them as good for nothing to him. Not saying that they don't do anything good, but what good are they to him? That's the basic question. To him, are they any good? No. What do they do for him? Nothing. What glory do they give him? None. What time do they give him? None. As far as God's concerned, I get nothing from these self-righteous people. Oh, some poor person may get a gift. Some needy person may get some help. But what do I get from these people? Nothing. There's nothing about their garment, their self-righteous clothing that they have made for themselves that indicates any concern whatsoever for me and my will and my glory.
None.
They wear their good Samaritan, good neighbor, and good deed pins, but they don't have any pins to say, I adore God. I agree with God. I belong to God. I help God. I care about God. I walk with God. I give to God. I serve God. I vote with God. The self-righteous has nothing about them that tells you that kind of story. They never say that with their lips. They never mention God. It also might be pointed out that the self-righteous have more than one garment. Not all their garments are self-righteous. They also at times appear to be dressed in garments of self-pleasure and self-gratification and self-indulgence. They don't give any military ribbons for rest and relaxation. They don't give any R pins to put on. But the self-righteous oftentimes sport a wardrobe of a variety of garments. When dressed in other clothes, they appear to look just like the unrighteous of the world. In other words, they have a Sunday go-to-meeting clothes, and then they have a weekday kick-up-their-heels set of clothes. It depends on when you catch them, what you catch them wearing. Because there's no way. I want my people to wear the heavenly dress all the time. Don't take the thing off when they get home to church. And put on the clothes of the unrighteous man. The guy puts on a righteous robe to pray, then takes it off and goes down and sits and watches carnal TV programs. No. I want you taking this off. You put it on, you keep it on. But a lot of folks who call themselves well-dressed for God undress before God and then get dressed up to do what is against God. We have a lot of folks that got to change clothes. You know, I got my work clothes, I got my worship clothes, and then I got my sin clothes and my play clothes. And that's not what God says I want you to do. I want you to dress for heaven. So when's heaven going to come? Could come any second. You don't know. Could come any second. But you don't be dressed in your in your sin clothes when you got to go. You won't be dressed in that garment that God says we ought to wear. Now, the garment required is a garment of holiness. Wish you could figure that one out without me telling you. And this garment is one that needs to be worn continually. In that sense, when you wear this garment, you're always dressed to enter heaven. You're always ready to go. And that's important, folks. That's important. Now, let's look at what the Bible says about this garment. Job 29:14. Job 29:14. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me.